Spirit Talk
with Sil and Jay. Welcome.
I'm Jay.
I'm Sil.
And welcome back to Spirit Talk.
All right. Today we are going to talk about addiction, living with an addiction, or living with somebody that has addiction. Want to start us out?
Sure. This is a good topic. I love talking about this. I've been through it. I am an addict and alcoholic and will always be one. This started off for me at the age of 5 years old when my father left and my mother was in distraught, and she handed me my first wine cooler. And I remember tasting it and absolutely loving it. And before that, I used to didn't like the taste of beer or even the smell of, like, to me, olives smelt like beer. And it was always kind of a turnoff. But when I had the wine cooler, that's where it started.
It's the taste. It's like sugary.
Mm-hmm.
For a kid, it's different.
And just knowing that it was, you know, alcohol, an adult beverage.
Yeah, something you shouldn't have.
Right. So, that being said, my addiction started about the age of 14, and a lot of it was due to trauma and my demons, which I call my thoughts, and being brought up with, you know, psychological, mental, physical, emotional abuse from one parent. My father was very harsh and very strict with his
punishments.
And so at the age of 14, I met some kids, and they were, I guess, into that kind of thing, and they brought me into it, and I really liked it. Started off with not only drinking, but smoking pot. Cigarettes. It was drinking, smoking cigarettes, and then it was, you know, smoking pot. And I loved what it did for me. It got me out of my own head, and it numbed me, because I was getting tired of hearing things like, from what I was told throughout my childhood, you know, that you'll never amount to anything. Everything you touch turns to shit. So I had a lot of negative self-talk, and I wanted to quiet that down. And I just felt like this voice was getting louder and louder, and I was willing to do anything it took to shut it down or off. And so we got into drinking really heavily, and it got to the point where my mom had alcohol and stored in her cabinets, and I would take drinks of that and replace it with, like, water.
Yes, typical.
So it got to the point where there was this older woman, and she took high school kids in and gave them alcohol and weed and stuff. And one time I wasn't invited, and everybody thought that it was out of jealousy, and it wasn't. And what had happened was I received a phone call from my friend's mother asking where he was, and I knew where he was, but I was with another one of my friends kind of in our crew, and I was like, what do I do here? And I kept thinking, you know, he could be in trouble. That's where my thinking went, and I wanted to help him. I didn't mean to get anybody in trouble or anything like that. I just wanted my friend to be okay. And so I agreed, and I showed the parents where the house was, and, you know, everybody got mad at me because I became a so-called, I guess, narc. Mm-hmm. And the woman got turned in, I guess, apparently was arrested. And that wasn't my intent. My intent was to truly help a friend. But I saw where this trend was going, and the more I drank, the more I hung out with these kids, the more I was getting into trouble, and the more I was getting into, like, drinking and smoking, you know, heavily with weed and stuff. So
you had a conscience, but the other stuff kind of took over.
Because it was all about chasing the high. Mm-hmm. and the addiction. And that's where it becomes a problem. It's kind of borderline, because I'll get into it here in a second when I went to rehab at the age of 16. But it goes with, it's borderline because I was taught in rehab that, you know, anything more than one is an addiction, or if you have to drink to get drunk or do drugs to, you know, get obliviated and extremely high, that's an addiction. So these people, it's kind of borderline. I don't really consider people alcoholics. They go out like a couple times a year and they have a few. I look at more somebody like they have to constantly do it, or to do it to
numb
the pain or chase the high. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, we call it druggy behavior. You're treating people like garbage, and you're miserable, irritated, and because you're all you think about is how can I get my next high? How can I get my next drink and whatever? And that's where it's about. And you start treating people and pushing people away from you that are close to you.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I could attest to that because I was married to one. So my marriage ended, but you know, you learn from it and you know a lot from it, actually. But at the time, you don't realize just how much you're learning from it.
So going back a little bit, when I was about 14, 15 years old, we were drinking heavily. We actually built a fort. It was pretty cool. And that's where a lot of our partying went and took place. And that's where I learned how to play poker and so many other things. And it was just getting to the point where I had the fuck it. I didn't care. Mm-hmm. And I didn't care about being blamed for anything. I just didn't care about life in general. I just wanted to
sign out.
Mm-hmm. And numb the pain and the feelings because I didn't want to deal with them. And it was to the point where I was drinking so much that I became a blackout drinker, and waking up the next morning having my friends tell me what I did the night before, or vomit in my shoes, or in the middle of wintertime, you know, walking from one place to another, which was like probably 5 miles apart in the middle of winter, because I didn't like how I was feeling. And it got to the point where I was starting to, you know, really hang out with rough kids that were getting into trouble. We were getting into trouble. And I remember this one girl had broken up with me, and I was really, you know, kind of heartbroken. And I remember saying to my sister, you know, don't wake me up unless this particular person calls. And she woke me up besides that person calling. And I remember because I had come home and I had over 12 pack in me and whatnot, I was still kind of buzzed and high and whatnot. And I flipped out on her. And I remember chasing her around, you know, with a knife, and I got arrested for menacing. And I went to jail, and I was scared, and I was praying for anything to get me out of there. And then all of a sudden, I served, I believe, 28 days in jail, and I couldn't go right back home. My probation officer at the time was able to get me into a rehab, which was like 6 to 9 months. And at that time, you know, being an addict, you don't want to go anywhere. You want to get back on the streets to get your high. And so I couldn't go back home after that. And I went right into a safe house, which was probably about another month. And then I went right into a rehab for 6.5 months out of 9. So I was basically gone for like 9 months out of that whole year. I wasn't home, all because of drinking and drugging. Mm-hmm. And I consider this place that I went to like my second chance of life. Mm-hmm. It taught me so much. It helped me to learn about my addictions and to control them better, to manage that better. And I did extremely well when I graduated the rehab that I was in, and I got out, and I was clean and sober for probably about 15 or so months. And I remember my sister and I got into some kind of altercation, which triggered me to go back to drinking and drugging, and I relapsed. And it was right before I relapsed, I just had opened like a big book meeting. I was a sponsor, and I was doing really well. And that triggered me to go back into to relapsing. And that's what I suggest for anybody who's trying to stop or break the habit is the first thing you need to do is get rid of people, places, and things. Things that trigger you, your paraphernalia, everything that reminds you of the times that you were using or drinking. And definitely not get involved in any kind of relationship, like romantically, within the first year of sobriety, because that is a trigger and a defocus. And we call it 13-stepping. So I really highly suggest not to get involved in relationships. Really do your 12 steps and focus on you for a while and not have that other distractions in your life.
And to not do it for other people, do it for yourself.
Exactly. So going back to the relapse, I got back involved with my friends who at the time were dealers. And being a dealer, that means you got free stuff. And that was a way to cover your high or your drunk or whatever, or your drink. So I did that for a while, and I started seeing and noticing all my friends either getting stabbed, robbed, going to jail. And this stuff was really scaring me. And for me, I got to the point where I kept hearing this voice in my head saying, you need to settle down. You need to have a child. So I had met somebody at a very young age. I was very young myself. And we wound up having a child, and it was my daughter. And my daughter changed my life and was my saving grace. Because I knew if I kept hanging out with these people, I was either going to wind up in prison or dead. Those were my two choices. And I didn't want to live that way. And I kept thinking after that, that I wanted to be the change. I wanted to do something different because I saw kind of a pattern going on within my own family. And I didn't want to be that. I wanted to do something different and become something better of myself. And so I led a different way, and I went completely rogue and off the grid and got rid of all the people, places, and things, and basically just dropped off the face of the earth and focused on my family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it takes a long time to recover for something, but when you have something to hold on to with your daughter.
And the key is, too, with any kind of addiction, the longer you're away from it, the easier it gets. It does get easier. It's also surrounding yourself with positive, uplifting, unconditional love kind of people who encourage you, who want better for you, and who look out for you. And that's really extreme, too. So one of the things that we also learn in rehab, too, is forming your own support network. So for me to this day, I have basically one person besides my significant other that I've talked to for over 30 years that has been with me through thick and thin from the very beginning of basically my addictions, and seen me, what I went through. And no matter what and where I go, that person comes with me too. And I am so grateful for that. And just, we'll get into it probably on later podcasts and stuff, and why I kind of am the way I am today. I have a very hard time with trusting men because of my past. And for me to be able to have a male best friend is I feel honorable. Mm-hmm. Because I don't trust many people. And I've been hurt and let down and whatnot. And like I said, we'll get into that later on.
You've got a whole book that people could read about you.
Yeah, and that book, folks, just covers the surfaces. Mm-hmm. It doesn't get into really depths of mm-hmm. things. And I wanted to have a book out there that was easy to read. I barely made it through high school and graduated with my class. I didn't go on to get educated more with degrees from colleges and whatnot. So I basically learned for me life on life experiences. And that's how I'm able to today. I consider myself a dry drunk. I like to have a couple drinks, maybe a couple times a year. I can sit there and have a 12 pack in my fridge, or six pack. I don't even get a 12. Six pack, And that'll sit there for 6 months before I even have one. So that's how I've gotten to my point, and I know how to adjust it and not have it so it takes the control out of me.
And, of course, I could care less whether we drink or not. So that's also good to have someone that is not going to push you into things. Like, I don't buy that stuff. I don't buy anything. And, you know, like yesterday we went out to dinner and we had a drink, and that's it.
Yeah, that you brought up a good point, is finding somebody who's pretty much the same as you. Because if you get somebody that's, you know, constantly drinking and high, and yeah, you've been away from it for 10, 15, 20 years, it's still kind of a trigger, and it still could go back that way, but you choose not to. It's just harder to be with somebody who constantly enables or wants to engage.
It's like you're working overtime trying to, you know, not go that route.
Exactly.
Well, also having pets is great because they're also very calming to the soul. And I just want to bring it up because now we have two kittens that are going to be coming, not just one. We decided that Stella needed a playmate, and his brother was still available, so we're taking both.
And we get them, what, June 13th?
13th, yeah.
Yeah. So that'll be exciting. Yeah. Pets are very therapeutic. I'd rather be around pets than people. And folks, I'm a lot of love and light and a little go fuck yourself too because of how I've been brought up, you know. So, and speaking on that, I don't know.
Well, the thing is too, is having people around you that, like you were saying, that's going to encourage you to do good things, not encourage you to do bad things. Also pets. They're also going to calm you down, which is crucial because your thinking starts going and going and going. And if you don't have someone or something like a pet that could actually get you to calm it down and focus on something else, you could go down a rabbit hole. So being by yourself is also very hard when you're going through a process.
And I remember that you brought up another good point, like being brought up and hearing from my mom, you know, throughout my life is Jay will be lucky to have five friends on your hand. And that is so true. And I've learned too, that just because they're family doesn't mean they're family. Mm-hmm. I found my family tribe that are not full blooded or not part of me whatsoever. And those three people that are significant in my life, I can trust wholeheartedly and I love wholeheartedly. So it's very crucial to find the right people for you.
Yeah, having friends and having acquaintances are different altogether.
Well, it's hard too, having these abilities and feeling like you're different and you don't fit in, and being told that if you start talking about it, you'll have a straitjacket put on you or you'll go to a mental hospital. So you're already growing up thinking that you're crazy and nuts anyway without any kind of confirmation or people that can relate unless you find them, you know. But it's just you feel alone. And that's where a lot of times I felt. And I kind of still do to this day. I feel alone, like I'm by myself. And I remember, too, what threw me for a loop was when my mom and my biological father had an affair while my mom was married to my adopted dad. And that threw me for a loop because I didn't want my dad coming back into the picture because I felt like he was going to do the same thing again. And basically, he did. And I grew up just wanting like my own personal sanctuary, my quiet place. I didn't want to be surrounded with noise. I was a lot to myself. I wasn't very social. I still not to this day. I really don't like it. Even though I've done galleries and stuff, it still boosts my anxiety and I have panic attacks.
Well, that reminds me. I'm kind of the same way. So all these years growing up, thinking you have to be a certain way to have friends or be a certain way to get accepted, or there's something wrong with you because you're not this way or that way. It's important that you stay true to who you are, because you will not get the friends that you deserve and that you need. Because if you're not yourself, you're not going to like anybody that's going to be with you, because you're not yourself. So that's not who you are. So you're not going to be the happiest. You're not going to, you know, it's not you.
Yeah, because you want to find people that you can be able to be yourself around and feel loose and comfortable and not feel like you're tense and have a guard up.
So I was also, you know, very to myself most of the time, especially nowadays. I've grown up enough where I kind of know what I like and what I don't like. I'm still learning, you know. I've kind of opened up a lot. But now I know what I really, really want. Yeah, I'm up there, you know, I'm halfway through my age. It depends on how long you live. But, you know, it's never too late.
So one of the things that helped me to lead me out of addiction is right before my daughter was born, I had gotten arrested again. And this time was going out with a friend, supposedly. And we decided to do shots of wine for some odd reason. Don't ask me why. Just shots of wine. And I was obliviated. And me and wine don't get along anyway to begin with. And I can't stand the taste. But we were totally oblivious. And he came up with a brilliant idea of, you know, let's go rob a house. I'm like, okay. You know, so we went along and we thought, okay, well, if we're going to be on foot, then we might as well try to find something that we can go a little faster with. So we came across this garage where it was open and there was bikes in there. And we decided to try to ride the bikes. People, I tried to get on a bike and maybe the wheels turned twice before I fell flat on my face. So that's how that went. And so then we got off the bikes and got back on our feet and we went around the corner and he decided, okay, let's go up to this house. Let's check it out. It's completely black. Of course it is. It's like midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, you know? Mm-hmm. So he decided to ring the doorbell. And of course, nobody's going to answer that late at night. And so nobody came. And we went around the side door. And I remember him busting through the side door and try to or the screen door to get to the side door to unlock it. And couldn't do that. And we went around to the back to the porch to try to get in the back door. And that's when the headlights came in and we both split. And I don't know how. My vibration must have been really high that night because I was in the bush right there in the backyard by the back porch and the police came and were looking over and didn't see me. But apparently they caught my friend and the next morning I get a phone call from his mom saying, you know, the police are on the way. So I remember going back to jail. I am truly blessed that I was appointed by a very good attorney to help me to get out of that because I believe I was facing like 3 to 9 years or something in prison. And I remember the
decisions, yeah.
I remember the judge looking at me and says, I don't want to ever see your face here again because otherwise you're going to go away for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And I, again, put on probation. And I really knew I needed to get my life right. And that's when my daughter came along. And that's when I decided, okay, this is the end of my ropes with this stuff. I want to do better for my life. I want something for myself. I need to distance myself from these people, places, and things that are big, huge triggers mm-hmm. for me and completely, like, again, go off the grid and go rogue mm-hmm. Because I didn't want to be sucked back into that because of my mind frame as it was already. I was easily influenced by negativity mm-hmm. and it was easily sucked into all that chaos and drama. Now, today, I'm to the point where I crave peace over anything. I don't want the chaos. I don't want the drama. I don't want the problems. I just want to be away from things, quiet, still, and live the rest of my life in peace and helping others.
Now, I know that your daughter was born, but she lived up to the age of 15?
16.
16.
She passed away in 2015. A year after I graduated from my holistic school for my psychic abilities. The day before she passed, I had a feeling that one of my kids, something was going on, and I have three children. one of them was, something was going on with one of my kids, and I couldn't put my finger on it. All I know is it didn't feel good. I didn't have a good feeling, and I was in a 10-car pileup before the day my daughter passed. And I remember even surviving that 10-car pileup and keeping the truck straight and not jackknifing it and all this stuff and getting complimented for that and stuff. But I kept feeling like, even though I was able to leave that scene of the accident, I still kept feeling like something's going on with one of my kids, and I just can't put my finger on it. Well, I had gotten back to the terminal and laid down, and about an hour later, my sister calls me with the phone call of my daughter passing. And it was, she was with a couple other friends walking Amtrak, and had her earbuds in, and the train hit her. And she couldn't hear her friends calling her. So that really has changed my life. And even though I had about a year of training under my belt with disabilities, ever since my daughter passed, it has put a fog over me. And I've been struggling ever since to get past that, to get back to where I was.
Well, something like that would trigger some people to go back with their addiction.
And I didn't. And I chose not to. The New Year's after my daughter passed, that's when, yes, I did get really severely drunk. And I just wanted to die. It took a friend at that time to help me, to talk me out of stuff and to ease my mind. And I remember I had another colleague tell me, don't go back to the scene, because you're a medium, you know, because you'll pick up stuff. And I, you know, here I am. I'm, you know, like, okay. I wanted to go anyway. That was my daughter. And yes and no, I should have listened. I should have listened because I went to the site, and about a month after that, I kept seeing the accident in my mind. And it was very vivid, and it was very painful. Mm-hmm. And after that New Year's, you know, I had my drink, and I'm good. And you know, it's all about using that as an excuse. And I know for me, my daughter would not want me to continue down that road. She wants me to do something with myself too. Get myself out there like she was trying to do with her singing. And so she wants me, I feel, to be some kind of a voice for people or the world or whoever's listening, to help them in some way or another, to guide them in a better direction. And you know, hopefully learn, you know, from my mistakes, and or see things and try not to do them yourselves. And I feel like that's really what it's coming down to. And I'm feeling like my purpose here in life is, and that is really learning about who you are and breaking patterns and cycles of your past ancestors and your family members. It's just, And doing things on your own without the voices in your head from, and I'm talking about like outside influences, outside noise, figuring things out on yourself. Because if you ask a question to one friend and then you ask a question to another friend, you're getting all this different insight from all these different people when you're trying to figure out something on your own. And I kept trying to play that in my mind, like, okay, what would happen if one of my kids came to me and say, you know, Dad, I'm having an issue with my significant other. I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, and I don't want either or my child or their significant other to have resentments towards me. So I would basically say to them, you need to take that up with your significant other.
It is better to work it out yourselves than try to get help elsewhere that are not professionals. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to have a counseling, that's different. But when you're just asking your friends, that might not be the best answer.
And I kind of laugh, but I'm kind of annoyed at the same time with all these folks that air their dirty laundry on social media. And to me, those are attention seekers. They need to thrive on it's that validation. Kind of attention, validation. Yeah. And I just, you know, for me, it's I found it always good for me to either meditate on something or get out in nature and think, really think about things without having other people's noise in your ear, you know?
Yeah. It's better to have a best friend that you can talk to than go on social media and, you know, let it all out. If people know too much about you, they're going to start forming their opinions. And that could go down a rabbit hole.
It can be too. But sometimes, you know, like, especially being a public figure or out there or something, you know, all these Debbie Downers and haters and skepticisms, and I'm skeptical too, so. But for me, those kinds of people give me motivation. Mm-hmm. And it means that I'm doing something right because something that I had said triggered them. And it's something for them to take a look at, or something that's, you know, like a trigger for themselves. And I said something or did something that makes them look at themselves. So basically, I'm a reflection for them. Mm-hmm. And it all comes down to choice, you know, whether or not you want to do something differently or keep doing what you're doing and keep getting the same results. Mm-hmm. So
sometimes you can go years and years and years and you're not ready to give it up.
Mm-hmm. So that's when I get to stinking thinking. Mm-hmm. That's what I call stinking thinking. And that takes basically getting sick and tired of being sick and tired before you eventually do something about it. And sometimes people have to hit some deep bottoms, some darkness, to be able to get to the light again.
Sometimes you do have to hit rock bottom, whether it's losing somebody or something, or, you know, work, anything, your life, friends.
Yeah. And I've probably been on my bottom at least 4 or more times throughout my life so far, you know, and I'm kind of getting tired of that too. So,
But yeah, if you're not with the right person, that could encourage you to get better and not tell you what to do, but encourage you to get out of a funk, you know, or whatever needs to happen just to support you.
And it's, and that's so weird, speaking on that point, because I have seasonal depression. My depression usually starts like in September and ends like the end of April, beginning of May of every year. And it's due to the trauma that I went through throughout my childhood. I still have triggers with that, but this year was particularly hard and rough, and I'm still trying to get through it and back up to the top. And it's heartwarming to know that there's other clients that I talk to, or not clients, I'm sorry, colleagues that have gone through the same thing. And it's feeling like the awakened souls are feeling more intense with their emotions and things of that nature than normal. And I haven't been this way in like 14 years.
Well, speaking of awakening, I've had my journey within the last year, and the feelings, it's incredible. You're going to go up and down, but it's more severe for me because I do have my highs that are very high and my lows that are very low. You know, dealing with depression, you know, doesn't help things. There are a lot of triggers for me. And Christmas is very dear to me versus for you, it's a reminder of something, you know, different. Mm-hmm. So it's a trigger for you. So I'm hoping that I can bring you out of that with some loving and some kitties.
Oh, I'm sure you'll bring me out of that. You've gotten me quite far. And that's what I say to Sil all the time. Like, if we can only see each other from where we were to where we are now, you can really see the growth. Mm-hmm. But just her and I being together within the last year, we've really seen tremendous changes. Mm-hmm. And one another, and it feels wonderful. And I used to say all the time, you know, opposites attract. They do in a way, but you more or less want to find somebody who's mm-hmm. a lot like you. And have a lot of similarities. And that'll be a subject for another day too, is like soulmates, you know, and the different types and kinds.
Twin flames, you name it. All kinds of different kinds of soulmates, basically.
So it's a relief knowing that you have a partner that's an empath too. Because empaths normally, typically, attract narcissists. Because we want to help, we want to heal, we want to fix, we want to save. Mm-hmm. And they thrive on that.
Yeah, and so we're givers. We just give, give, give.
And they take.
And we get nothing back.
And so we call them energy, or vampire energies, or psychic vampires. So it's good to actually find somebody who's empathic, just like you. It's different. It throws you for a loop, especially when you're used to one kind. And this is something that I posted on my page not too long ago, because I'm getting tired of the stereotypes, the profiling, the classifying people. People are people. And we all go through our things. We're all here. I feel our purpose is to learn lessons so we don't do them again. And it's all about finding your tribe and being yourself, your true authentic self, and being pushed to find that person in you, within you. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that concludes our podcast for today. And we're not really sure yet, again, what we're going to talk about next time, but stay tuned.
Have a great day, everyone.
Have a great weekend. All right.
And that concludes today's segment on Spirit Talk. I'm Jay.
And I'm Jen.